This week on the Auto Trader Podcast.
Taking the car to the dealer for a service outside of the service plan and warranty, that's where it gets expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
But there is a certain amount of peace of mind that comes from knowing, you know, we have somebody here that works with us. He's got an old car. He still takes it to the dealer to have it serviced. That car, I can tell you now, is actually worth more now than what he paid for it 5 years ago.
Welcome to the Auto Trader Podcast. I'm here. My name is Tyad Zambiri, and we have the man, the myth, the bike legend himself, Mr. Lawrence Mini. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. Tell yourself.
No, I'm good. Thank you. You are going to be teaching me a lot bike-wise in that as well. So
maybe.
Sensei, tell me all your secrets.
I have nothing to add at this point in time.
But he will teach us soon. But anyways, let's get into today's show. We have a few topics up for discussion. We have hot or not, say what, if you ask Auto Trader questions, and we also have how often should you be servicing your vehicle. So please stay tuned for that. Kicking things off with hot or not, the best and worst, the greatest of all time vehicles that we think have come across, in our opinion, and then which some people might find controversial for whatever reason. So, Lawrence, let's kick off a few, man.
All right. So, I basically put this into three categories for myself. Mm-hmm. The one being supercars, then cult classics, and then the thing that everybody has to have. So, from those three categories, I basically chose the McLaren F1, the granddaddy of all hypercars. You can find one, you're definitely going to want one because this is the benchmark. It is, and 25 years on, this is still the car that people reference when it comes to supercars and hypercars.
Yeah, it was pretty much the benchmark of its time and even up to now, no less.
Hey man, 24 gold carat open engine bay, that's going to be something. And a central mounted seat. It's like it's close as you're going to get to an F1 car.
I mean, put all of that specification into a rap song, 24 karat gold and all that. Like, it's definitely withstood the test of time, definitely, I can say.
Do you have a supercar that you're after?
In terms of supercars I'm after, I pick a vulnerable choice, being the Ferrari F40, because it's the pinnacle of 90s supercars, but also experimental in that you got a twin turbocharged V8, you got that carbon fiber body where you can even see a lot of the weaving through the paintwork, because the paint was so thin on the F40. Reno, please nod your head if you're hearing that. That's our Ferrari man in studio right now. But that's one of them, definitely, I'll say. Yeah. But moving on to your next choice, Lawrence.
So, cult classics. And I know it's going to be a bit corny, but the 67 Fastback Mustang.
The Mustang.
That is the quintessential muscle car. And it is, I mean, that is currently for sale on Auto Trader.
Oh.
You can buy it. It's here in South Africa.
Well, go and search the site now and go buy this thing. Someone, whoever's watching, go do it.
Seriously. And that's the movie replica, the Eleanor.
Yes.
And we're not allowed to say the name, you know, just in case the lawyers come after us. But you got to have a cult classic muscle car. And, you know, that is the closest we're going to get to an old American muscle car here in South Africa. And we can't get things like the Dodge Demon and the Coke bottle Chargers and things like that. But do you have a cult classic?
I do. But before we get to that, speaking of attainable cult classics in terms of the Mustang, the Fox Body Mustang.
Yeah, we don't talk about those.
No. Fox Body is fine. It's perfectly
fine. No. We don't talk about the 80s. It had bad hair, bad clothes, and bad cars.
Fair enough. Now, in terms of cars that I would pick, the first category for me would be personal bias, the Subaru Impreza.
I'm not going to argue with you, but I'm going to say, it's not really my style, but, you know, WRX STI back in the 90s when I was just started driving, that was the car for track attack.
And I was a child playing PlayStation, and that's how I found out about it. But the reason why I put it on this list in particular, it's one of the perfect embodiments of neoclassic vehicles where any person could get it, every person, let me say, in that it was practical, it was fast, it had some pedigree to it and heritage, if you will, in terms of winning the Road Valley Championship and such. And then even moving on to today as well, it still carries a lot of that, even though Subaru is no longer in rally, in the World Rally Championship and that. Internationally, a bit of a different story. But yeah, that's a car that you can aspire to get, and it is attainable still to some degree. But anyways,
I'm going to say that if you find a second-hand one, run as fast as you can in the opposite direction.
Listen here, people. Listen here. If you find yourself a neat one, get it. With all your might, get it.
But anyways, moving on. In terms of more modern-day cars, I would look at the Golf 5 GTI. And for
that's a good one.
Because this is the car that a lot of people regard as a return to form for the GTI. And I also think so myself as well. You know, many have regarded the Golf 3 and the Golf 4 as more milquetoast kind of GTIs. But whereas with this, VW said, okay, we're going to go back to the drawing board and we're going to give you what you want and more.
Now you see, now the Golf 5, that is a cult South African car. That is a car that it's an aspirational vehicle for South Africa. But I've got another aspirational vehicle that coming from a completely other side of the panel is the Toyota Hilux. I'm not just talking about the new Hilux. I'm talking about old Hiluxes.
That is the plus edition one. There we go.
Hilux has been around for over 55 years. They're heading towards 60 years that brand has been in South Africa.
Wow. Okay.
So I think on Auto Trader, we have models that date back to 1993, I think is the oldest one I could find. But just think about that. That car has been on the road longer than you've been alive.
That much is for certain. I've seen a lot of Hiluxes and then even predating that.
Hilux, that is a cult classic. And I mean, you can find an older Hilux, you know, if in that kind of condition. Mm. You know, that is an investment car because there's going to be somebody out on a farm in the Free State that's going to be like, you know, I want that one.
This is the vehicle. This is the pinnacle. last car for me would be, this is an interesting one, the first generation Renault Twingo. Hear me out.
You're dead to me.
Hear me out. This is one of those vehicles, and I did quite a bit of research surrounding this car.
Did we even get this in South Africa?
We did not, but what the vehicle embodies, that's the thing. Now, this was around about the time when Renault was in a little bit of a limbo and they needed a car to fulfill the entry-level space. And they scoured through all the designs that they had and they thought, you know, what are we actually going to use? We need something to fill in the space left after the Clio and the Renault 4, I think, which this replaced. And then they said, hang on, let's use this. And it sold gangbusters numbers in Europe. And it was just the perfect embodiment of, fine, it's a cheap car, but it's cheap and cheerful, dependable, and it has a personality. And it just shows that, you know, despite the fact that this is an entry-level car, it needs to keep the cost down and all that, Renault aced it. And it shows that this is definitely possible with smaller entry-level cars.
Just unfortunate we never got it here.
I wish we did.
And it's got a silly name. Anyway, moving on.
Anyways, moving on to say what?
What?
Exactly. This is a very interesting thing that we found on the internet. And this originates from Australia, where there's actual kangaroo tech within the VW badge that's supposed to apparently scare away kangaroos or something like that. Which, for something to have that much of an investment, it means kangaroos are a bit of a problem.
Yeah. No. Any Aussie will tell you the roos are a pain. They're... I don't even know what our equivalent would be. What are those things?
Maybe a springbok even.
No. Those little gray birds that destroy the front bumpers of cars.
Bin chickens.
No, in Afrikaans we call it a tarantal. But yeah, those things are everywhere and roos are everywhere. Now, from what I read here, basically the badge plays an audio signal. It's an audio, like a little speaker, but it plays an audio signal that chases kangaroos away. Grey kangaroos, red kangaroos. I didn't even know that there were different types of kangaroos. I thought a kangaroo was a kangaroo. But apparently they've been testing this on golf courses and stuff.
Wow.
And it chases the roos away. Most of the people out here live in South Africa, you will have encountered some wildlife with the front end of your car.
Oh, yeah.
I have connected quite a few animals in my time, long lifetime drives to the Karoo, and
jeez.
Yeah, things happen, man. And it unfortunately, when an animal vehicle incident happens, it causes tremendous damage, even at low speed.
Oh, yeah.
We've heard stories of cars being written off after connecting one of those guinea fowls. That's its thing's name.
A guinea fowl of all things. Goodness.
It will obliterate the front bumper, the undercarriage, even the steel under tray covers and stuff. It's crazy. Now, if you can imagine that, that's what happens with the guinea fowl. What happens with a kangaroo?
Because it's a massive thing.
So not only for vehicular safety, but also just because they're a pest. They dig holes and they eat.
Kangaroos are a national treasure.
If you can fit something in the front of your car that's going to chase the things away, I say go for it.
And I think to add to maybe NCAP safety systems that are centric to those areas, it makes sense for the most part.
You know, I think it's Volvo that actually has animal recognition along with traffic sign recognition. They can actually recognize the outline of a moose and an elk and things like that.
And I think Audi has something similar along the lines of night assist as well, especially to help you with those night driving escapades. Look,
any assistance you can get that's going to save your car and maybe save Bambi.
Why not? Then we can have another Bambi movie. Anyways, moving on. So this is a topic that tends to come up quite a bit. We get asked questions about it quite often, whether you are going to buy bread or in an office setting like what we have right now. How often do we really have to service our cars? I think things have changed, let's say, in the recent future, recent past. English is hard. But what's your view on it?
Okay, look, I'm old school. I come from a time period where, you know, you serviced your car and you kept your car serviced, not only for the vehicle's health, but for the future value of the vehicle. Because the little handbook that's in the glove box isn't just there to gather dirty fingerprints. It is actually there as a record of your car's inoculations. It's like going to the doctor. You know, your car needs to have the oil changed. It needs new spark plugs. It needs new filters. And these things need to be done at regular intervals. Now, in the past, the common knowledge was that you did this every 12,000 kilometers. So every 12,000 kilometers that your car did, you needed to do a service.
Yeah.
That has changed slightly since the
it's mostly due to the advent of like synthetic oil, that much I've picked up.
So there, we will get into the arguments about different types of oils and stuff at a later date. But the manufacturers are now, because engines have become, the tolerances have become tighter and the engines are now much more compact. And we have things like turbocharging technology on little engines instead of turbochargers on big engines or naturally aspirated big engines. The engines need to be serviced more often. So manufacturers are now recommending that you service the car every 6,000 kilometers with a minor service. Now, a minor service is basically just an oil change, oil filter, air filter. That can be done just about any garage, any service center can do that. And it's generally cheap. You're looking anywhere between 1,500 and 2,500 rand.
Consumables and
for a normal city hatchback. Of course, naturally, the more complex the car, the more expensive it gets.
Yeah.
Every 12,000 kilometers, they're now saying do a major service.
I've picked that up, yeah.
So, which is oil filter, oil, spark plugs. Sometimes they'll say we need to change out the coolant. So we take out the old coolant and put new coolant in because rust builds up on the inside engine. So they change the coolant. Yeah. And then they'll run a diagnostics check on the car. To plug an OBD in and say, okay, the thing's sensor on the left bank is unhappy. We need to maybe change a sensor or to tell the mechanic because there's so much more electronics in a car.
Yeah.
So that will tell them, okay, you need to maybe have a look at this. Cars nowadays are so smart, they will actually tell you, hey, I need to be serviced. You'll get an alert about the dashboard says, car is due for service now. Head to your locust dealer.
And potentially even order parts on the fly as well.
Well, Teslas, I think they were saying that Teslas could do that, but we don't talk about Tesla because they're not here. But a service, you must be prepared for what will happen if you don't service your car.
It's a big ticket repair.
Same. If you don't go to gym and treat your body right or exercise or eat well, your body's going to fail. Same thing happens with a car. You don't change the oil, the oil that's in the engine turns into gunk. Mm-hmm. The filters clog up. And the filters clog up, it cannot filter what's in the engine. Then your engine starts to break down. If you don't change the plugs, your engine will start misfiring. There's so much that can go wrong if you don't take care of the car mechanically.
Yeah, and it also just gives you a bad perception of a particular vehicle, because now modern cars, especially nowadays, there's less room for error in terms of, you know, breakdowns and all that, you know, provided you do regular maintenance and the like. But the thing is, when some people tend to forget that, okay, because I have X vehicle, I know that this thing is strong, it's whatever, it can go and do the distance. And then when things start to go horribly wrong, then you get the wrong perception of that vehicle, which I think is a bit unfair, but do your services regularly. That's the thing. Yeah.
Now, servicing, like I said, it just because you have a specific type of car, and I'm speaking now specifically about used cars, secondhand and older cars, you don't have to take the car. So if you have a Mazda, you don't have to take the car to Mazda. Mm. You can go to any garage that will do the service for you, as long as they stamp the book.
Yeah.
Because if you have a service history, which is what we talk about in the adverts and stuff on site, FSH, full service history. Mm-hmm. If you have a full service history, the person that's buying the car is looking at that book and going, oh, this car has been taken well care of.
Mm-hmm. It tells you the story pretty
much. So let me, this is a good car. Because I know it's mechanically sound, it's been taken care of. If you take the car to somebody that's going to service the car might have been serviced, but if they're not stamping the book with an official stamp and a signature, mm-hmm. you don't have a full service history.
Exactly
that. Now, yeah. that takes us to the opposite end of the spectrum, and that is service and maintenance plans. Mm-hmm. So when you buy a new car, you get the warranty, and then optional, sometimes they unbundle it from the price of the car, and sometimes it's part of the price of the car. You can't say no.
Yeah.
They will say to you, right, the service plan is for 3 years and 150,000 kilometers. Mm. In that time frame, they will tell you there are service intervals. So you need to bring the car to us, to our dealership, at 15,000 kilometers, and we are going to change this, 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 and this, and this. Mm. And we will stamp the book. And it's official. And we use official parts from the OEM. Mm. Those are usually done between 15 and 20,000 kilometers. They give you manufacturers will depend. It depends on the vehicle as well. If it's a diesel, if it's a petrol, if it's a hybrid. Mm. And those costs are bundled into you're not paying. You take the car there, they sort it out, you go fetch it. You don't pay a cent. Mm-hmm. Taking the car to the dealer for a service outside of the service plan and warranty, that's where it gets expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
But there is a certain amount of peace of mind that comes from knowing, you know, we have somebody here that works with us. He's got an old car. He still takes it to the dealer to have it serviced because he wants the stamp in the book, because when that car, which is, by the way, one of the cult classics we could have talked about, that car maintains its value because of the stamps in that book.
No, it's true.
Car, I can tell you now, is actually worth more now than what he paid for it 5 years ago.
Service your cars, people.
Service your cars.
I mean, coming back even to just the thing of having the book stamped and all that as well. And this is the thing, like the out of warranty stuff. Well, not out of warranty, out of plan. Sorry, my mistake. It's the thing of, I've seen a lot of manufacturers now, I know BMW started doing this, where they offer out-of-plan service bundles and even just try and reduce the cost a little bit when it comes to out-of-plan servicing.
It's an
encouragement also to like also keep and maintain your old car as well. I think that's another thing that comes about as well. Because I know a lot of people fear that, oh, as soon as the maintenance plan or service plan is done, I'm selling this thing. It's out of my hands.
Yeah, because the service costs become exponential. Mm-hmm. You find it a lot with your German luxury models. As soon as that car is out of service plan, it loses 15% of its value and nobody wants to touch them with a 10-foot pole because it costs so much to service them because they are so advanced. It's not just a case of, well, I'm going to pull it up on the ramps in my backyard and change the oil. Can you service your own car? Of course, yes.
Yeah,
it's right to repair. As long as the car is out of its warranty period. Yeah. The minute you put a spanner to that engine, you've just voided the warranty.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So once the car is out of warranty, if you've got a black thumb for oil and whatever, go for it. So I say, service your car. If you want to change wheel bearings, go for it. There's nothing wrong with DIY work. Mm-hmm. But understand that if you don't do it properly, it could cost you a lot more money at the end of the day.
And actually, make sure you follow service manuals and all that stuff in between if you're going to be doing DIY work and all. Because though you get general guidelines for a lot of cars, the thing is, there's certain nuances to consider with particular vehicles I've seen.
So a lot of times the cars will themselves require speciality tools.
Yeah,
exactly. Like any VAG product, be it Volkswagen, Audi, you have to have special tools to be able to work on those cars because the normal tools that you can buy at your local parts shop won't fit.
That's true. I've seen. No, that was a lot of insight, Lawrence. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I hope I didn't confuse anybody.
No, you're 100%. Now we must get into Ask Auto Trader, where you submit your questions, we ask them, or answer them. Sorry, English is hard today. So yes, first question from Minette. How do I sell my trailers?
Okay, so Auto Trader is a vehicle sales platform. Everybody knows cars,
yeah,
but they don't know about the bikes.
And
leisure items. Now, not as popular. You're going to we have that listing site under leisure where you can get everything from jet skis to boat trailers to boats to caravans and trailers. I haven't actually seen any of the little two-wheel Fenta trailers that they use for camping. But big camping trailers, those ones that fold out into a three-bedroom house, for a camping weekend.
We've got a place for the dog.
I believe those are on site as well. So if depending on what kind of trailer she's trying to sell, you can check out the leisure listings on Auto Trader.
And get yourself a boat at the same time.
Or a bike.
Then next question. What is the difference between year model and date of manufacture? This does tend to confuse a bit of people, but...
can of worms, bud. Can of worms.
That's the thing. It also depends from manufacturer to manufacturer. But from my understanding, year model is from the time that it's registered. And date of manufacture, as the name states, when the car was assembled and complete and then got the stamp to say it was made on this date.
So here's an example. Kia Sportage.
Yeah.
Vehicles assembled and built in Slovakia, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I stand corrected. But I believe it's somewhere in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
That vehicle rolls off the assembly line in February of last year.
Mm.
The four wheels touch the ground at a dealership in South Africa in January.
Mm.
The year of manufacturer is 2023.
Mm.
The year, the make and model, the model year is 2024 because it is being sold in the country of destination or whatever in that year.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit gray when we start getting to like the December, January period, when we start having the changeover because there's some cars that will arrive in December, but they're only sold in January. But, at the end of December, beginning, there's a 2-week gap. It gets gray. So it is a bit messy. The best thing to do is to really check the VIN numbers, make sure that the dealership that's selling the vehicle is on point. And this specifically is around new vehicles.
Yeah.
It affects used car sales when we start getting down the line. You check the VIN number on the OEM's website and it says, this was built in 2022.
Yeah.
And they're selling it in 2023. Like I said, it gets very, very gray when we start getting towards the end of the year, December, January, where you will be able to start buying cars in December that are labeled as 2025 models.
Let's not even get into leap years.
Yeah, it gets messy, but pretty much you nailed it on the head there. For the consumer, it is about when the warranty period starts.
Yes.
The minute the car is registered on eNotice, the warranty period starts. So if that car sits on the dealer's floor for 2 months, 108 days, whatever the case may be, all that time, that warranty is ticking away.
Yeah.
So the consumer who's buying the vehicle might lose out on 2 months worth of warranty. So we want to try and keep the date as close to the date of purchase as possible.
It's such a mixed bag of things there, and also trying to match it all together.
It is messy. Yeah. And at the end of the day, what the question is referring to is, will I be sold a car that is a year old already?
Or you feel like you were duped or something, but meanwhile, it's a bit more of an explanation.
It is
than
literally,
what we had now.
It is, we, you know, the OEM could build the car and it could stand on a dock in the country of origin for 8 weeks waiting for a ship.
Fresh off the boat.
And now we start getting towards like December, January, then the vehicle arrives the next year, and it is then technically a next year's model, but it was built back then. At the end of the day, I think it really is all about the registering process and when the warranty kicks in.
Yeah, I think that's the most important, pretty much. The more you know. Anyways, that's all the time we have for now. I hope you enjoyed the show, people, and hope you learned something as well. So this is me, Mr. Tayed Zambiri, and Mr. Lawrence Mini.
This is me saying goodbye. And good. Don't forget
to search Auto Trader. Reader's bike reviews are very nice. Search Auto Trader.